Noon, everybody. You're listening to Beyond Reality on BBS Radio. I'm your host, Shelley Kerr. You can visit me online at www.galactichealing.org. And today I am very excited to be welcoming Jean-Claude Colvin, author of the book Going Deeper, How to Make Sense of Your Life When Your Life Makes No Sense. And I'm sure many people can relate to that. Jean-Claude has been a highly successful entrepreneur who's launched more than a dozen business ventures over the course of four decades, during which time he studied with spiritual masters and led awareness-expanding workshops on six continents. He stimulates the hidden memories deep within and seeks to help realign this planet's inhabitants with their souls. And he's written a very, very special book that I highly recommend to all of you out there listening. Jean-Claude, welcome to Beyond Reality.
Thank you. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you for being here. So I wanted to talk about your background. You were born in France. Tell us about your father. He fought in the wars, and tell us about your early life.
Daddy fought in two wars, but let me take it from a different perspective. One of the things that I'm working on in my new book is revisiting astrology from the point of view of not you're born with a particular planetary configuration, which we all know about, but what if we could go back to the point of initial decision where we picked the exact moment and circumstances of our birth? Why did we want the planets to be exactly as they were? So instead of looking at, well, these are my strengths and these are my challenges, why did I pick these strengths? Why did I pick these challenges? What was in my mind at the time? And what I did is I went back and looked at the exact moment of my birth and realized it could not have been done more perfectly for me to come out the way I did. I was born in France. I had a French father, a German mother, which is a pretty odd combination considering I was born during the Second World War. We were fleeing the Germans at the time. Dad had served both in the First and in the Second for the French. We were fleeing the Germans. We were in southern France, so I guess I'm a French redneck. And the town I was born in was really by accident. This is where I dropped out, where the truck happened to be when I popped out. And so I was born in a little market town called Villeneuve-sur-Lot. It's in France between Toulouse and Bordeaux and Lot-et-Garonne. I was 2 years old when we found our way to the to Casablanca, to the north coast of Africa, and got on a Portuguese fishing boat that took me to the United States. So I've been in America since I was two. My parents were fairly old when they had me, so we were major generational gap. And in addition to that, we had the cultural gap. My parents never really made the transition to being American. And as you know, all little children want to belong wherever they happen to be. So I walked away from my French heritage very much, my parents' world very much, even though it clung to me, and I never could get completely away from it, and wanted to become an American. But I was always, as a result of circumstance, a stranger in a strange land, and I have been ever since. Ever since I was a child, I knew that I was a misfit. I was living in somebody else's world.
Right, and that's a lot of the message that you're talking about in Going Deeper as well.
Mm-hmm. I think those of us that are the planetary servers, in the book, obviously, I call them wanderers because we wander in from other densities, but they're called light workers or star seeds or planetary servers. These are beings, at least in the mythology that I'm looking at, there's about 70 million of us on the planet, and we've come from the higher densities just to take incarnation now during this time of shift to be of service, almost as if we're being silent midwives to the process. And those of us that are here, we always have this vague sense that we came here to do something special. We don't know what it is, but whatever games are being played on this planet is being played by someone else. It's not for us. We look out at the stars wistfully. Very often, I've had allergies like you cannot believe until my wife took care of them. She's a brilliant naturopath. Mm. But I was allergic to everything except saline solution at one point in my life. I always felt more comfortable with plants and animals and little children than I do with most people. And frankly, most of the stuff people get involved in and talk about and interact with that they find very, very interesting to them bores me silly. And I think there's a lot of other people like me on this planet that have a sense of ennui that at some point in my life I realized my life made no sense. that I was following somebody else's dream. I was on somebody else's merry-go-round, collecting meaningless plastic gold rings that had no value except in their game.
Right. You talk about, I think the book, as you've mentioned, it's for the people who are asking, you know, why am I here?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe people feel a sense of sadness and despair about the way humans are treating each other. And you start the book out with a powerful section about 9/11. How much of the book is autobiographical and how much of it is channeled or whatever you want to call that? I mean, tell me about your process.
The process was interesting. People ask me, how did you write the book? And I said, the same way that a pregnant woman gives birth. You just can't hold it in any longer.
Yeah.
And there it was. And when I knew that I was going to write it, I sat down with a friend of mine and came out with about 24 topics that I thought I'd like to cover in the book and write the book about that. And I just finished giving an interview to a magazine, and I gave them the line. I said, you know the old adage, when man plans, God laughs. Of the 24 items that I wanted to put in, I think the book actually touched on two of them in a completely different way. So what happened is when I started to sit down, it was almost as if another part of me, my higher self, took over. And the book became a pure channeling, but not in a sense of a channeling from another entity,
right,
but more of a download coming from a higher aspect of myself. And it was in the beginning a recap of stuff I had been through. And about a third of the way through, it began to switch. The character and I merged, and it became totally, not only autobiographical, it became an actual journal, real time, of what I was going through as the character was. So the questions I was asking was questions that were of tremendous curiosity within me to find the answers to. The experiences, the difficulties that the character was experiencing, so was I. There's a point in the book where the character faces death, and within hours of that chapter being written, I got a call from my urologist telling me I had cancer.
Wow.
And so it was almost eerie what happened. And it was like an intertwined DNA. You cannot separate me from the character. So it's quite a fascinating process, almost as if it gives a tableau, like automatic writing, like a gigantic Ouija board for my higher self now to play out the lessons from my own life.
Right. Now, I don't want to spoil the plot twist of the book, but I want to talk about it. Now, Larry is the character in the book.
Larry, as you said,
it's kind of parts of you or higher self.
We blur so much that I can't tell you where Larry stops and I start, or I start and Larry stops. I really don't know. No, we are very, very much one and the same, although he's of a different age, he has a different occupation, he's involved in different things in his life. At the core of the being, we have the same resonance.
I think that you've done just a really great job of creating a fictional work that conveys the feelings that I feel that so many people out here have. The sadness, the sense that I have a purpose, but I don't know what it is yet, and I need to go do something with my life. You know, maybe I'm not from this planet, and all the other things that people are thinking about right now. And I think you've done a really beautiful job of weaving this into the fiction.
Thank you. The odds are, if people have a nagging thought that maybe they're not from here, I would say the overwhelming odds is that they are correct. And it would be wonderful for those people to have a framework on which to revisit their entire lives and create a new perspective on who they really are. The reason I did the book in fiction was primarily so that I could write it. Frankly, I did not know what was coming out in the pages. I've read it 7 times now, and each time I read it, I'm reading a brand new book. I'm learning stuff I did not know before, and I slap my head and I say, oh my God, that's what that means. Now I'm beginning to understand it in a completely different way. The book has within it the energetic keys that unlock the blockages within us that cause us to forget. And it's done it for me, and it's done it for so many people that have come back to me and say, I can't tell you how shifted I am as a result of going through the book the second, the third, the fourth time. It's like a kaleidoscope that's written on a spiral. And the beauty of putting it in fiction, it allows me as the character to say, I don't understand. You know, it's a perfectly clear explanation. It makes a great deal of sense to you, but I don't get it. So another voice now can come in, another character can come in and say, look at it this way. And I say, I still don't get it. And now we can introduce even a third voice that says, try this. And then you go, ah, now I'm beginning to understand. Because what we're dealing with is paradox. We're dealing with concepts that are ineffable. They cannot be put into words. And they're elusive. And so all we can do is hint at them and evoke a resonance inside of the heart as opposed to the mind. And that's what the book does, apparently.
You did a beautiful job on it. You're listening to Beyond Reality. I'm talking to Jean-Claude Coven. You can visit Jean-Claude online at www.prismhouse.com. Jean-Claude, do you think, I mean, the veil of forgetting is what you call it in the book. Why do we choose to forget? Is it for lessons, or what do you think the reason is for that?
Oh, interesting question, and a very, very big question. Now, if ever you ask a question that goes infinitely deep, this is it. Let's go now into the mind of creation. And notice I don't say the mind of the creator, because Western concepts of religion separate the two. They view that there is a particular deity called God, and God is the being behind all creation. See how the artist and you have the work. That creates instantly a sense of separation, distance between the two. If we now shift the concept of God as a noun and take what Buckminster Fuller suggested and look at God as a verb, everything shifts. God is no longer the creator, but God is the very unfoldment of creation itself. And it's not that God is in all things, because that again is separation, but that God is all things. And every single aspect of creation, whether it's manifest or no, is part of the all that is. Then what we become, you and I, we become aspects of the all that is, aspects of creation, aspects of God, through which the cosmic hologram, the all that is, the creation, experiences. So we become God as us. Everything you meet is God. Everyone you listen to is God. When you speak, you are speaking as God. Now we go back to the question, why do we go through the veil of forgetting? If you are omnipresent and omniscient, and you know it, then your experience range is very limited. The first distortion, the first gift of God, is free will. In order for free will to allow itself to express, there has to be an energy, and for lack of a better term, we'll call it love. Love is the basis through which manifestation, all creation, springs. Now we're curious in our curiosity to see what it would be like if we would set up an illusion, a matrix, in which we impinged our awareness, and in that matrix we would forget who we are, and we would have the illusion of polarity and duality, and we would experience abandonment and separation. We would feel a lack, a universe of lack, so we needed to attract stuff to us in order to be okay and to prove that we existed. And we would have something which is not available in the same way on all the other realms, which is the full realm, the full range of emotion. We have a Disney A-Land roller coaster ride throughout this illusion. It's a very, very rich illusion, allowing the creator or creation to experience itself infinitely. And that's why we do it, out of curiosity.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, what would we do if we didn't have a journey to go on here? I mean, you know,
we would create one.
Exactly. We have to.
You know, people have this wonderful vision of we're going to be in white robes and we're going to listen to harp music for eternity, and that's a very scary thought to me.
It sounds nice, but really, come on.
Oh,
we'd be too bored.
I'd last 48 hours.
I don't even think I could make it that long.
Well, we'd invent a game like Kick the Harp or something. I have no
Did you see that movie? You probably did, the one called The Gods Must Be Crazy, it's about a remote Africa, and
the
bottle falls out of the airplane.
Yes. The Coke bottle falls out of the sky.
And then they're knocking each other out over this Coke bottle, you know, so it's the same kind of thing.
Sure.
I personally think, you know, how can we really know the mind of God completely? We can know ourselves, but we must still continue the mystery because that's part of what we came here to do, I think.
The only way we will come to know the mind of God is when we so totally merge into it that there no longer is a I knowing anything, and we cease to exist as an individual entity. Then there isn't an I to know, and we will have resonance beyond the mind, beyond knowing. What we try to do from our little ego selves is to try to understand something much bigger than ourselves. It's like a fish in the ocean, swimming around all over the place in search of water. It's a very tricky slope to navigate.
Very. You're listening to Beyond Reality, and I'm talking to Jean-Claude Coven. You can visit Jean-Claude online at www.prismhouse.com. Right now we're talking about his new book, Going Deeper, How to Make Sense of Your Life When Your Life Makes No Sense. Jean-Claude, one of the things I love about the book was the winkers. So talk to us about the winkers.
The winkers and the wankers, okay.
Yeah, winkers and wankers.
When I
just thought
child,
that was a really creative way to express that.
I devour. I can't explain wankers totally on air, but I'll come close. When I was a child, I devoured science fiction. I remember reading a story that I've never been able to find since, entitled When Two Soothsayers Pass, They Invariably Wink. And the winkers are the people who know that this is all a goof. This is all a game. It's all a spin. No matter how we present it, no matter how solemn we are about it, we're spinning. And just because we believe it to be true doesn't make it less of a spin. The winkers know that. The wankers are the ones who take this thing entirely seriously. I'll leave it to the audience to look up wanker. It's a British word.
That's your homework, everybody.
That's your homework. I won't go there.
Yeah, we don't need to go there.
But it's we each have within us the winker element and the wanker element. And there are times when I am just an unforgivable wanker. And there's just nothing I can do about it. I just watch myself stuck in the illusion, having no ability to pull myself out. And I give myself 45 minutes of total grief, and eventually I work my way out of it. And there are times when I'm an absolute winker, and I seem like a Zen master for 10 seconds. But there we are. You know, we go back and forth like a yo-yo in the illusion.
Yeah, I guess it's part of the journey. Yeah, sometimes when you're in the illusion, you're going, I know better than this, but you still can't get out of it right away.
Oh, absolutely can't. And so the key thing is to be able to create a point from which you view yourself. And that's why
exactly.
The book goes into the section with Junie where it goes into voice dialogue, which is probably what I have found to be the most elegant form of pulling apart the personalities and the subpersonalities of the various internal cells.
Once you
grasp that and you begin to understand the tension of opposites, you've taken a long way to breaking through the illusion because you learn how to create balancing at every instant. So the book also teaches that. The book teaches some real practical knowledge on how to deal with the part of yourself that is totally married to and totally stuck in this illusion. I mean, the bottom line is we're here. When I wake up in the morning and look around, guess what? I'm here.
Here we are. So how do you think people can do that?
Well, by creating this third point of view. The book goes into the two great lessons that have to be done on this planet in order to graduate from this density and move into the next density of light and love is, one, to be able to determine how you want to use your love energy, either in service to self and service to others, and the book goes into that. But mm-hmm. the one that's much more interesting for me is how do you create balance within your own life? And there it's much more interesting. Whenever you have an incident that generates emotion in you, you realize it's a knee-jerk response. Something has been triggered and you're not in charge. How very interesting. So now you say, okay, I'm in the supermarket, and all of a sudden I find myself behind four people whose baskets are full enough to have five church picnics. And so part of you starts getting very angry. You now watch the process and you say, isn't this interesting? Jean-Claude is getting angry again. What else could Jean-Claude do in this situation to not be negative, to spread light on everybody, and to counterbalance the same vibration that he has with anger with something on the opposite side of the teeter-totter, a seesaw? And so I could picture, well, Jean-Claude now can say, oh, my God, how lucky am I This is 7 minutes out of my life that gives me a chance just to stand and observe and not have to do anything. What a gift. I can stand here and just radiate light and love to all the people around me so that they don't feel badly about the fact that they're holding up the entire line. They shouldn't do that. And there's so many ways to look at the same situation and find ways to balance it. The magic that happens when you do this process is you implicitly create another point from which you are viewing options. You're no longer stuck. Even though you have the reaction, you're pulling yourself out by the scruff of your neck, and you're seeing a brand new way of looking at your life. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like waking up in the dream and saying, hey, I'm getting ready to run an old pattern of behavior, and I don't need to go there anymore.
Right. And we realize that our in the illusion is nothing more than a lucid dream. And if we can begin directing that dream as we might in lucid dreaming, then we can redirect all of reality. We can change the entire nature of the universe and what happens on this planet.
Yeah, that's what we need to do. There's a part in the book, I'm not going to give away any narrative clues because I want our readers to read this. Larry is talking to Zeus, and Zeus says, the prime mandate of creation, senior even to love itself, is free will.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about free will.
That's what I spoke about before. The first distortion, the first gift of creation is free will. In order for creation to experience itself infinitely, it had to relinquish direction. It could not be omnipresent and omnipotent and experience infinity. So what it did is it allowed free will, the expression of free will using the love energy, to create itself through consciousness any way it wished. What we have in our galaxy, for example, and what our scientists have since found, is at the very center of all galaxies is a black hole. And we look at a black hole from a physical standpoint, and it doesn't quite make sense to us. And I think it was Stephen Hawking recently said, I'm reversing myself. I now think that a black hole actually leaks information. Of course it leaks information. The black hole is a point of supreme consciousness to which we return and from which the entire galaxy sprang. And what it did was it would create other points or sublogoses like our sun that also is a conscious entity being that in turn created solar systems. What we have is every single aspect of creation is part of a vast cosmic hologram imbued with consciousness. That's why that debate is so amusing to those of us who see it from another perspective between the evolutionists and the creationists. Because from our perspective, they're both absolutely right. If the species is fully conscious and is self-directing, is that creation? Of course it is. Is it evolution? Of course it is. Everything is driven by curiosity to experience ourselves infinitely, and that is done with what you asked before with free will. Now, free will is very different from what we actually experience day to day on this planet. This is the first density in which consciousness has the opportunity to have free will, but in fact we don't. We're so overburdened by preference, by bias, by predilection, by dislike, that we are not free to make decisions based on curiosity. We make them primarily on liking, affinity, or aversion. We only get to do free will from the aspect of our soul and higher self being, not from our small ego I.
You're listening to Beyond Reality. I'm Dr. Shelley Kerr, and I'm talking to Jean-Claude Coven. You can visit him online at prismhouse.com. And Jean-Claude is going to be speaking in May at the annual WESAC Festival out in Mount Shasta, and so you'll want to see him there. Jean-Claude, I am totally...
Shelley, if I may.
Yes.
Just to speak on WESAC for a second.
Oh, sure.
It's more than a festival. It is arguably the most important energetic gathering on the planet. It mimics the mythology of the WESAC Festival, which is the full moon in Taurus, that happens every year at the hidden valley high in the Himalayas, where the Christ comes and Buddha manifests for 8 minutes to bless the participants. I've been an attendee of that festival time and time again, only because it's a rush of energy that is absolutely transformational. this, unlike most other gatherings, is a gift that each of us give ourselves, where we come in attendance, hold the collective energies, and really do receive the blessings of the Christ and the Buddha. You know, we can talk about it forever. It's like talking about what water tastes like. But if you come and have a sip of this, it will transform you in ways that are absolutely unimaginable. So I commend it highly as for people to attend. This is like, you need to do this, I think, almost the way the faithful go to Mecca or Medina. Mm-hmm. This is a festival to go to, and this is, from what I understand, one of the largest, most powerful gatherings, if not the largest, most powerful, outside of the Himalayas.
Wow. And you can see this online at www.wesak.com.
No, it's .us, I believe.
Oh, .us. Okay.
.us.
And it was founded by Dr. Joshua David Stone.
Dr. Stone is the one who started it, and he unfortunately died last year.
Yeah, but I just heard that.
Yes.
But he definitely left his mark.
His dad, Hal Stone, was our teacher, my wife Ariane, my teacher in voice dialogue. So
wow.
It's a very small, incestuous family of beings that really are working hard to make a difference on this planet.
Yes, that's where I wanted to go next. Talk to us about, you've had such an incredible journey with all of the spiritual teachers and people who have crossed your path at the most appropriate of moments, and I was just wondering if you could talk to us about some of the most influential teachers you've had, if that's possible.
What comes to mind was really interesting. I mean, some of them are, you know, some of them really are animals. People say, why are animals in the book? I was in New Zealand by myself. I had just left Jim Hertak, who wrote The Keys of Enoch.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, he talks about his visitation, taken by the Master Enoch and shrouded in light, and taken as far as Enoch could go, and then taken by Metatron El Shaddai to the throne of the Father. And when he was there, he was taught a very, very powerful chant, the most powerful of all chants, that is chanted continually by the Elohim at the throne of the Father. And initiated me in the chant, and then the two of us would travel and do it together to some of the temples in Thailand. When I left him, I went to New Zealand and was at a place of thermal activity around Rotorua, like near Lake Taupo. And I was walking around the sort of like a national park that was there by myself. And I was walking through the path very, very quietly, just doing the chant. And a little rodent comes out and looks at me, and I look at the rodent, and I stop in the path. And the rodent could be more than 3 feet away from me. And I'm doing the chant, and the rodent does the most extraordinary thing. It curled up and went to sleep.
Wow.
And that, for me, was like a teaching beyond teachings. And some of them are very strange. When my wife and I were in Thailand, we went to a sacred temple north of Chiang Mai, where the relic, the hip bone of the Buddha, was supposed to be buried in the foundation. And I was walking around the temple, and I looked into a room, and there was this monk having darshan with maybe 50 or 60 people there, in some sort of very private ceremony. And the monk looked up and saw me, and I started backing away, and he beckoned me to sit down. And he called me silently into the room and had me sit right in front of him. And I'm sitting there in a cross-legged position with the other 50 or 60 devotees. And the next thing I notice, there's water being sprinkled on me. The monk is reaching into a little bowl of water in front of him and flicking it with his fingers on me. And I wake up, and there's only the monk and me. There's no one else in the room.
Wow.
And he reaches into the bowl and pulls out a tiny Buddha with a very specific mudra of teaching, and gives it to me, a tiny little Buddha that I still have, and it lives in my spirit house, in my living room at home. And we never exchanged a word. He never said a word to me. I cannot tell you with any certainty what happened. I don't know. I don't know if I imagined the people. I don't know if they were there and they left. I don't know what happened. I don't know how long it took. It was as if I was transported into another place and then re-delivered.
Wow.
And this happened on the journey again and again and again. There's so many stories. We could literally fill hours and hours with these wonderful stories. But these are my teachers. I could name tons of them. I was very privileged to work directly with Cliff Sanderson, who's a was the recipient of the Albert Schweitzer Prize for Medicine for the work that he did with the kids from Chernobyl.
Mm.
And he is a master teacher of intentional healing. And he, my wife, and I worked together in Hong Kong, working with a lady who had cancer, and spent a great deal of time with Cliff there. I think we spent a total of 5 weeks in Hong Kong, living in Central. We were gifted with an apartment. I mean, it was an actual magical time, and we met a lot of the people in the metaphysical community way behind the business community that people look at Hong Kong for, and went to Lintau Island and had magical experiences there. Studied with Wilson Wang, a doctor, on the Ling Su in Hong Kong as well.
Mm.
So it's every place we went is another adventure. From there we went down to Singapore, and I could tell you stories with the Buddhist monk Michael Boy that to this day still amaze us. So I could keep going forever.
I love to travel too. What's your favorite place in the world, or can you narrow it down to one, or your favorite area of the world?
Interesting question. My wife and I have made our anniversary as our sacred date. So what we do is we celebrate each other by going to a place we've never been in the world to experience something brand new.
Last year it was
San Miguel de Allende in Mexico, and this year we're going to go to Cyprus and the people I want to meet and spend some time with in Nicosia. If I had to go back, I think, I'd have to give a slight nod to Italy. Being in Sicily is magic beyond belief. Going to the Aeolian Islands and climbing Stromboli almost killed me. But Tuscany and Umbria, I mean, it's just amazing beyond amazing beyond amazing. There's traveling and traveling. I mean, we used to always, wherever we used to go, not that many years ago, but I don't think I would do it anymore, is we would just get a motorcycle. And unplanned go through the countryside however we wanted. So it was a way for us to interact without being attached to the number of stars that hotels had.
I think that's neat. I think riding a motorcycle is very liberating.
Oh, it was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
That's neat. I agree. I love to travel, and it's hard for me to go back to a place twice yet because I think that this world has so much to offer. And like you said, there's just an adventure around every corner, you know.
I tell people, imagine yourself riding on this vast airplane, and you're going to be in it for 80 years, and you never change your seat? You never get out of your seat to walk around the plane? It's a little weird. You know, and we are. I mean, if you take spaceship Earth, we're hurtling around the sun in a galaxy in a solar system that's spinning around the galaxy at a phenomenal rate of knots, while our entire solar system spins around the galaxy. So we spin around the sun spins around the galaxy moves at an untold speed comparable to all the other galaxies in the central sun of our universe. So we are just passengers on the illusion of creation. And the mandate is experience, taste, try, see, come back and regale the angels with incredible stories.
Yeah, you know, there's that saying, you know how people always think heaven is somewhere out there, but the thing is, this earth has so many beautiful spaces that I'm inclined to believe heaven is here right now.
It is for me. For me, it is such a joy and a privilege to be here. There's no place else I could dream of being. I'm not living my life in preparation for another experience. I'm living my life because this experience is such a blessing.
It really is.
Oh, Shelley, it is. I woke up one day with the realization that the greatest blessing I could ever be given was to be sufficiently conscious to realize that I was bearing witness to creation.
Yeah.
And once I got that, once I really got that at the core of my being, I realized that anything that I ever asked for, anything, only diminishes what I already have.
Yeah. There's just so much. I just got back from a month in India that just changed my life. I mean,
Did you go to Bangalore or put Farti?
I was up in Delhi speaking at a conference, and then we went to Jaipur, And the most amazing part of the journey was going down to Varanasi at the mouth of the Ganges, where the pilgrims were bathing. And, I mean, oh, my gosh, I got chills and started to cry and the whole thing. It was one of the most moving experiences in my life.
We have yet to do that.
You've got to go.
We've been blocked.
Oh, I feel blessed.
Oh, it is a blessing.
You have been there.
Yeah. Well, you were there for me. Thank you.
Yeah, put that on your list. I don't know.
No, you've done it for me, and it may be on my list, but I certainly get the fullness of it through you and just the energy you bring back with it.
Yeah, and some of the things you've shared with me today have been really neat as well. There's something, I mean, that moment, we had a long trip, and, you know, I'm sure you've had this experience before where you're just worn out.
Mm-hmm.
We show up to the river, and the sun's about to go down, and we get these little... They had these little leaf cups with these little candles in them, and we lit our candle and sent it down the river, and this huge cloud of incense and all, celebrating and worshiping creation. And, I mean, it was one of the most amazing moments of my life, and all that exhaustion just lifts off.
Isn't it amazing to be surrounded by consciousness?
It is so incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
Such a blessing. You're listening to Beyond Reality. I'm talking to Jean-Claude Coven. Visit him online at prismhouse.com and visit him live at the WESAC Festival in May. Jean-Claude, any closing thoughts before we end our time?
Who knows? That's so many. I was just asked on this interview as well. I said, yeah, closing thoughts are, guys, lighten up. It's called enlightenment, not enheaviment. Stop taking yourself and creation and God and all this kind of stuff so seriously. And you wake up to the realization that the only thing on this planet that needs to change is me. If I can work on myself and change the points from which I view, then everything I perceive will shift. It's that simple.
Absolutely.
And I wish everyone joy. I just wish everyone sees the giggle in all things. And I would always tell people that don't get out of bed until you can think of 10 things that you're deeply and genuinely in gratitude about.
I totally agree with that. I was teaching in a prosperity workshop, and I have a gratitude journal. That's the only thing I'm supposed to be doing in this journal, is just every day writing down what I am grateful for.
Mm.
And it is an incredible process to do, because the more you observe gratitude, then the more you have to be grateful for.
Oh, we have so much.
We do.
And it's just a trick that causes us to focus on the negative. It's a trick. It's an artifact of the veil. And if you can absolutely reverse that. Oh, you and I need to sit down sometime when we don't have an hourglass, and there's so much to talk about, Shelley, so many things to explore and share and listen to.
There's a lot going on, and I think you're definitely doing your part to help us all, and I thank you for writing this book.
It is my absolute pleasure to continue writing.
Yes, I want you to continue writing. You're listening to Beyond Reality. We've been talking to Jean-Claude Coven. His book is called Going Deeper, How to Make Sense of Your Life When Your Life Makes No Sense. This is a wonderful fictional account that brings to life some very important principles that we all need to think about, and things that we already are thinking about as we come to this great shift in consciousness. You can visit Jean-Claude online at www.prismhouse.com. Jean-Claude, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
And I can't wait to meet you someday.
We'll make it happen. The good news is it's completely up to us to make that happen.
And we will.
And we will.
Many, many blessings, my friend.
And you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Beyond Reality. I'm Ellie Kerr. You can see me online at www.galactichealing.org. You can get information about private sessions for hypnosis, for past lives, future memory journeys to help you create the reality that you're trying to create. You can also see the radio show website at beyondrealityshow.com. And this weekend I will be out at the International Conference on Science and Consciousness in Santa Fe, New Mexico at the La Fonda Hotel. Until next time, I wish you many blessings. And stay tuned for more interviews. Thank you.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.